This video presentation reviews the life of Imam Reza alayhi salam and provides an overview of his social, scientific, and political achievements. This presentation also highlights the conspiracy and the political complexity which led to his selection as the crown prince by the Abbasid Caliph. Imam Ali ibn Musa alayhi salam, also known as Reza, was born on the 11th of Dhul Qa'adah in the year 148 of Hijri in Medina. He was also known as Abul Hasan as per family traditions of the Ahlul Bayt. Shia Imams with the name of Ali were also honored with Imam Ali's title of Abul Hasan. The Imam was born less than a month after the martyrdom of his grandfather Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, who was eager to meet him. Imam Sadiq had frequently told his son Imam Kazim alayhi salam, "The scholar of the Prophet's family will be from your lineage, and I wish to meet him." Some historical records suggest that Imam Reza was the oldest son of Imam Kazim. Imam Reza's mother was a slave who was originally from Africa, an area that is currently between Egypt and Sudan. She was owned by Imam Kazim's mother Hamide, who noticed her piety and great character. Hamide then decided to marry her to Imam Kazim. She was called with various names, including Najma Khatun. However, to remove bad memories from the period of her captivity, she was named Tuktam by Imam Kazim upon their marriage. Also, when she gave birth to Imam Reza, Imam Kazim called her by the title of Tahire, which means the pure one. When Harun assumed power, the Abbasid government was at its peak and had expanded from northern Africa to India. Harun portrayed himself as a religious individual. While he was heartless and cruel in his government, he kept himself busy with amusement, music-filled parties, and gave huge amounts of wealth from the public Baitul Mal to famous singers for his amusement. Imam Reza's birth coincides with the martyrdom of Imam Sadiq and the beginning of the imamate of his father Imam Kazim. Imam Reza grew up under the direct guidance of his father. He witnessed the extensive oppression of his father by multiple Abbasid caliphs during his father's long imamate of around 35 years. There are limited historical records on the life of Imam Reza before his imamate. However, the available records do show the imam's divine knowledge and his special status in the eyes of Imam Kazim. Divine knowledge, which was an essential characteristic of Shia Imams, was apparent in Imam Reza years before his imamate. The Imam would sit in the mosque of the Prophet in Medina and would answer the people's questions regarding the Islamic law while he was just in his early 20s. Imam Reza grew up in a large family and had many siblings, including 17 brothers. However, Imam Kazim paid special attention to Imam Reza amongst his other children. He introduced Imam Reza to his sons as the scholar of the Prophet's family and asked them to refer to him for their religious questions and to seek guidance. Despite the extensive pressure enforced on Imam Kazim during his lifetime, he introduced Imam Reza as his successor in the imamate on various occasions. Once Imam Kazim came to a gathering of his family in the mosque of the Prophet with his son Imam Reza. He introduced Imam Reza as his deputy during his lifetime and his successor after his death, and asked them all to testify to his statement. On another occasion, Imam Kazim gathered a group of his family members and companions as witnesses for his will. In his will, Imam Kazim chose Imam Reza as his successor and gave him full authority to decide about various aspects of his family affairs after himself. These affairs included decisions about the marriages of Imam Kazim's daughters, the spending of one-third of his wealth, and stipends to be paid to his wives. Imam Kazim and the witnesses then sealed the will. During the time of Harun, there was an excessive amount of pressure and oppression on Imam Kazim by the government. Harun ordered the imprisonment of Imam Kazim at various locations in Basra and Baghdad for around 4 years. He eventually ordered the poisoning and martyrdom of the Imam. The historical records suggest Imam Reza's miraculous travel from Medina to Baghdad on the night of the martyrdom of Imam Kazim to take care of his father's funeral rites. The Imam then returned to Medina on the same night in hiding. On the following day, Imam Reza informed his family about the martyrdom of his father, but asked them to keep it confidential until the news of the martyrdom of Imam Kazim was officially delivered to Medina. After a few days, when the news of the martyrdom of Imam Kazim was brought to Medina by a messenger, the family of Imam Kazim publicly grieved for their loss. In the beginning of the imamate of Imam Reza, he did not publicly declare his imamate. This was due to an extensive amount of pressure dominated in the society following Imam Kazim's imprisonment and martyrdom by Harun. It was highly possible that Harun would be a threat for Imam Reza. Thus, Imam Reza only revealed his imamate to his family as well as loyal companions and representatives of his father, Imam Kazim. Imam Reza was a source of the Islamic ethics and morals in society. He would respond to bad behavior with good behavior. At the beginning of his imamate, one of his brothers, Abbas, accused him of inheriting large hidden wealth from their father, Imam Kazim. He brought the imam to court and asked the judge to order the imam to open the sealed will that had been passed to him from Imam Kazim. The imam and two of the witnesses of Imam Kazim's will rejected Abbas's accusation. However, Abbas himself opened the sealed will in the court and read it. He realized that there was no indication of wealth left by Imam Kazim in his will. Instead, Imam Kazim had explicitly chosen Imam Reza as his successor and had asked his other sons to fully obey him. Upon revealing the will, Imam Reza did not retaliate against his brother. Instead, Imam Reza explained to his brother that the motive behind his brother's accusation was his debt and the fact that he needed money. He told Abbas that he would pay off all of his debt and will not hesitate to help him in the future along with praying for him. The main challenge of Imam Reza in the beginning of his imamate was with a few of his father's representatives who refused to accept him as the next imam after Imam Kazim. They were among the other representatives of Imam Kazim in his network of representatives across the Islamic territory. They were responsible for guiding the Shias according to the imam's teachings and advice, collecting their obligatory Islamic dues, and resolving issues among the Shias in their community. They were among the Shia scholars who were spreading the narrations of the Shia imams and were strong in their Islamic knowledge. For around 4 years during the imprisonment of Imam Kazim, they did not transfer the collected obligatory dues from their communities to Imam Kazim, nor spent it according to his guidance. The stored wealth in their possession became significant and was enough to entice them against their duties. Thus, when Imam Reza asked them to transfer the collected wealth to him as the next imam, they refused. They instead denied the imamate of Imam Reza by denying the martyrdom of Imam Kazim. They claimed that Imam Kazim was not martyred, but instead was the promised Mahdi by the Prophet and had just disappeared from the eyes. These representatives were able to gather some support from their Shia communities and separated themselves from the main Shias who accepted Imam Reza as the next imam. This faction of Shia was known as Waqifi, or those who stopped at the imamate of Imam Kazim. The denial of Imam Kazim's martyrdom by the Waqifis was against clear historical evidence, as many had witnessed the martyrdom of Imam Kazim and had attended his burial. For example, right after Imam Kazim's martyrdom, Sindhi ibn Shahak, who poisoned the Imam, tried to portray the Imam's martyrdom as a natural death. He gathered more than 50 people in his house to display the Imam's body. He asked them to testify that the Imam's body did not have any sign of injury or suffocation. He later put the Imam's corpse on the bridge of Baghdad over the Tigris River to disrespect the Imam and the Shia belief. The people of Baghdad visited the Imam's corpse to witness his demise. Later, when Harun's uncle, Sulaiman ibn Abi Ja'far, was informed of Sindi ibn Shahak's actions, he found it against the political favors of the Abbasid government, as this could trigger Shias, who were in large number in Baghdad and other cities, to rise up against the government. Thus, he sent his agents to take the Imam's corpse from Sindi ibn Shahak's soldiers. He then held a big burial ceremony for the Imam where crowds of Muslims participated. Despite clear evidence about the martyrdom of Imam Qasim, the Waqifis insisted in their belief and continued their ignorance. The Waqifi faction began with three of Imam Qasim's representatives whose monetary interests were involved. They were able to gather some supporters from the Shias as they had social acceptance in their communities. They were also known as scholars who would recite the narrations from the Shia Imams. They fabricated narrations from Imam Sadiq and the other Shia Imams in their own favor to prove their false claim that Imam Qasim was the promised Mahdi and was still alive. They also misused vague narrations from the Shia Imams and interpreted them to their benefit. Among their fallacy was to use Imam Qasim's name Musa and relate it to the story of Prophet Moses, who isolated and disappeared from his nation for around 40 days. They concluded that Imam Qasim had disappeared temporarily and would later appear to the people. While Imam Riza had not yet publicly declared his imamate, he did not stay silent in confrontation with the Waqifis who branched from the Shia community. Imam Riza debated with the leaders and the followers of the Waqifis on multiple occasions to guide them. The Imam proved to them that his father was no longer alive and his inheritance had been distributed amongst his children. The Imam also corrected fabricated narrations by the Waqifis. Further, he interpreted the true meaning of the vague narrations that were misused by the Waqifis. The Imam would also provide them with the knowledge of the unseen to prove his divine knowledge, which was a sign of the Shia Imams. Overall, the Imam was able to guide many of the Waqifis to his imamate. The remaining Waqifis caused trouble for Imam Riza during his imamate and instilled doubts in the hearts of his Shia followers. They looked for any excuse to blame the Imam and justify their own belief. Once they told the Imam that if he is the righteous Imam, why doesn't he declare his imamate publicly? The Imam responded that he was following the Prophet, who started his mission of prophethood in hiding. They also challenged the imamate of Imam Riza in the society as he did not have any sons to inherit his imamate in the future. Imam Riza denied their accusation and told them that God would bless him with a son who would be the next imam after him. Imam Riza's son, Imam Javad, was born when he was 46 years old. After all the accusations, when they insisted on their belief, the Imam cursed the leaders of the Waqifis and introduced them in the same rank as non-believers due to the lies that they associated to the Shia Imams. The Imam also asked his followers to stop any relationship with the Waqifis and isolate them in their community. Historically, the Waqifi ideology did not last long and has become extinct. Harun did not perceive the Imam as an immediate threat for his government. However, he was frequently advised by those close to him, particularly his minister Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki, to take action against the Imam, who was being followed by the Shias as their next Imam after Imam Qasim. However, Harun would reject their wishes to act against the Imam. Harun would respond that we have killed his father, should I kill them all to satisfy you? Harun was aware that Muslims, especially the Shias, held him responsible in the martyrdom of Imam Qasim. He did not want to put his government further in trouble by aggravating the long-standing hostilities between the Prophet's descendants and the Abbasids. Harun had appointed spies in Medina to closely monitor all aspects of Imam Reza's activities. Once Harun received a report from one of his spies that the Imam went to the market and purchased some domestic animals. Later, someone came to Harun and said that the Imam had opened his house for the people and had called them to his imamate. Harun surprisingly responded that he said something contrary to what the spy had already reported. Thus, he did not pay attention to the conspiracy against the Imam. Due to frequent talks against the Imam, Harun once decided to kill the Imam. He sent someone to bring the Imam into his presence. When the Imam saw Harun, he quietly recited a supplication that was passed down to him from the Prophet. Once Harun looked at the Imam, his decision suddenly changed. He told the Imam that he had ordered a big reward to be paid to him and asked the Imam to write down his family's needs. When the Imam returned, Harun consoled himself by saying that he wanted something and God wanted something else, and whatever God wants is better. After a period that is estimated by some to be around 4 years, Imam Reza publicly announced his imamate to the people. He was frequently warned by his close companions that the declarations of his imamate might trigger Harun to persecute him. The Imam dismissed their warnings and told them that similar to the Prophet who made a prophecy that his uncle Abu Jahl, who was his opponent, would not be able to harm him, he promised that Harun could not harm him either. The Imam assured them that they could consider this prophecy a sign of his imamate. The Imam's declaration of his imamate coincided with the time that Harun decided to remove the powerful family of Barmaki from his government. He was afraid that the increasing power of the Barmaki family in his government could endanger his power. Thus, he killed or imprisoned influential characters and politicians from the Barmaki family. He also imprisoned his famous minister, Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki, whose hostility led to Imam Qasim's martyrdom. Yahya was kept in prison for a few years until his death. The elimination of the Barmakis from the power benefited the Imam as they were hostile toward the Ahlul Bayt. The Barmakis would frequently speak ill of Imam Qasim and Imam Reza to Harun. Shortly after, Harun's attention was diverted to the riots and the unrest in the eastern parts of his government. The uprisings of Hamza in Sistan and Rauf ibn Layth in Central Asia could gather support from the people as they were suppressed by the oppression and the injustice of Ali ibn Isa, Harun's governor in Khorasan. Harun wanted to make a smooth transition of power for his sons and was concerned about the uprisings and instabilities in those regions. Thus, he personally traveled to Khorasan to manage the situation. However, after meeting with Ali ibn Isa and Ray Iran, he decided to return to Baghdad as he had received the news of instability at the border with the Roman Empire. The insecurity in Khorasan remained unsolved until Harun removed Ali ibn Isa from the power and sent troops towards Central Asia for a war against Rauf ibn Layth. He himself traveled again to Khorasan to oversee the situation despite his illness. However, he could not complete his journey and died close to the city of Tus in Khorasan in current-day Mashhad, Iran. Harun's occupations and various problems in his government benefited Imam Reza as Harun did not find an opportunity to persecute the Imam. Thus, the Imam continued his imamate in Medina without any major threats from Harun's government, and his prophecy of Harun being unable to harm him became a reality. Thank you. Harun was concerned about the power struggle between his sons after his death, so he decided to implement an innovative plan unique in the history of the Abbasids. He divided the entire Islamic territory under his control amongst three of his sons and provided them with independent resources and income. He gave the mainland of his territory to Amin, his primary successor. It included Iraq, Hijaz, Syria, and northern Africa with a capital in Baghdad. This large portion of his kingdom was stable and was dominated by Arabs who were supportive of an Arab caliph. He chose Ma'mun as the successor of Amin and the caliphate and gave him the rulership of eastern parts of his territory including Iran and Khorasan with the capital in Merv in current-day Mary, Turkmenistan. These areas were unstable and subject to various uprisings. Harun knew that Ma'mun, with his leadership skills, could manage the instability in this area. Furthermore, Ma'mun's mother was an Iranian slave, and he could better collect support from the Iranians in that area. Finally, Harun selected his son Qasim as a successor of Ma'mun in the caliphate and gave him rulership over small territories around Turkey and northern Iraq. This area was also unstable. However, due to its small size, Harun was hopeful that Qasim would be able to manage it. Harun also authorized Ma'mun to remove Qasim from his position in the future. To ensure that his plan would be implemented after his death, Harun went to Hajj with his sons and asked them to write a testimony and promise that they would abide by this deal. Harun then ordered the testimony to be hung inside of the Kaaba as an evidence for the other Muslims who were not present in the Hajj that year. After Harun, his son Amin became the caliph as his primary successor. Amin was a corrupt pleasure seeker and lacked common leadership skills. His government was mainly managed by his minister, Fazl ibn Rabi. Harun initially wanted to select Ma'mun as his primary successor instead of Amin, as he was more clever and had stronger leadership skills. However, he changed his mind to respect his beloved wife Zubaydah, who is Amin's mother and belonged to the Abbasid royal family. Ma'mun's mother, however, was an Iranian slave. Thus, Amin had more support among the Abbasid family and the Arabs for the caliphate compared to Ma'mun. Right after Harun's death in Khorasan, Amin called his troops and treasury to Baghdad. He initiated a series of actions against Ma'mun, which damaged the relationship between the two brothers. He then asked Ma'mun to resign from his position, which was clearly rejected by Ma'mun. He ousted Ma'mun and Qasim from their positions and instead appointed his infant son Musa as his successor. He also destroyed the testimony about Harun's order for successorship, which was hung inside the Kaaba. This chain of events led to extreme animosity between the two brothers. Ma'mun was at a disadvantage compared to Amin, and thus needed more support from the people under his rulership. Ma'mun began treating his people kindly. He reduced their taxes, rewarded the elderly, increased the salary of his troops, and portrayed to be an open-minded and caring ruler. He emphasized the Iranian race of his mother to gather more support from the Iranians. He selected his minister, Fazl ibn Sahl, and the head of his army, Tahir ibn Hussein, from the Iranians to show his commitment to the Iranians. He also built a good relationship with his neighboring governments and settled the uprising of Rafi ibn Layth by accepting his surrender. Amin, who was certain of his victory, deployed a large army towards Khorasan to forcefully eliminate Ma'mun from his power. He selected Ali ibn Isa as his army's leader, who was the former governor of Khorasan for around 10 years during the government of Harun. Ali ibn Isa was a hated character in the eyes of the people in Khorasan due to his oppression and injustice in his past government. This mistake by Amin was effectively used by Ma'mun to warn the people in Khorasan about the consequences of Ali ibn Isa's victory, and thus more people joined Ma'mun's army. Ali ibn Isa's army came into a battle with Ma'mun's army under the leadership of Tahir ibn Hussein near Ray in Iran. Although the army of Ali ibn Isa extensively outnumbered the army of Tahir ibn Hussein, they were unexpectedly defeated, and Ali ibn Isa was killed in the battle. After this battle, Amin repeatedly recruited more men for his army and sent them to the battle against Ma'mun's army. Over a course of more than 2 years, multiple battles took place between the two brothers. However, these battles ended with victories for Ma'mun, and his army moved closer to Baghdad, the capital of Amin. Ma'mun's army surrounded Baghdad for more than a year before they could finally seize the city and kill Amin. After Amin's death, Ma'mun officially became the only Abbasid caliph. Instead of relocating to Baghdad as the capital, Ma'mun decided to stay in Merv and made it the capital of his government. With this decision, Ma'mun wanted to show appreciation to his companions and the people of Khorasan who supported him to gain power. Also, Baghdad was the center of the Abbasid royal family who had betrayed Ma'mun and supported Amin in the battles against him. They were hostile towards Ma'mun, and thus Ma'mun preferred to distance himself from them. There are no historical records about any communication between Amin and Imam Reza during the 5 years of Amin's government. Amin was a corrupt pleasure seeker who would indulge in intoxication and other sinful behavior. His confrontation with Ma'mun and their frequent wars prohibited him from taking any action against the Imam. Imam Reza was known for his knowledge amongst the Islamic scholars. He was given the title of Alim-e-Ali Muhammad, or the scholar of the Prophet's family. The Imam was frequently referred by the scholars of Medina to get persuasive answers for their questions. These questions covered various aspects of Islamic faith and law. After almost 2 centuries from the demise of the Prophet, Muslims were surrounded by many challenging questions for their beliefs and needed guidance from a divine source. This was also the case for the Shias, who were constantly guided by the Shia Imams since the demise of the Prophet. The Shias had received high levels of teachings from Imam Baqir and Imam Sadiq about various aspects of Islamic beliefs. However, more than 40 years had passed from the time they could freely access Imam Sadiq in Medina and ask him their questions. They were under an extremely repressive regime during the end of Imam Sadiq's life and over the long imamate of Imam Qasim. Towards the end of Harun's government, there was a great opportunity for Muslims to access Imam Reza and ask him their questions with relative freedom. A better opportunity emerged for the Imam during the government of Amin for around 5 years. This period was the calmest period in the imamate of Imam Reza and was effectively used by the Imam to guide Muslims and openly spread the Shia theology. Imam Reza also trained many notable scholars during his imamate, 6 of which are among the most authentic companions of the Shia Imams. These scholars have recorded precious narrations from both Imam Reza and Imam Qasim. These 6 scholars, along with the 6 of Imam Baqir's companions and 6 of Imam Sadiq's companions, are known as Ashab-e Ijma, or the Companions of the Consensus. These 18 companions are the most authentic companions of the Shia Imams, whose narrations are currently regarded with the highest level of authenticity and trust by the Shia scholars and seminaries. Around 5 years after Harun's death, Ma'mun was finally able to eliminate Amin from power and bring the entire Abbasid territory under his control.
However, his government was unstable and various uprisings and riots were threatening his power. The main threat to his government was led by the Alavids, who had viewed the Abbasids as an illegitimate government since their establishment. The term Alavids refers to the children of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which also includes the Prophet's descendants from his daughter Lady Fatima. Thus, the Shia Imams were also from the Alavids. The Alavid uprisings were initiated in Kufa by one of the descendants of Imam Hassan, known as Ibn Tabataba. He initially met Abu Suraya, a former army leader of Ma'mun, who had separated from Ma'mun's army due to a financial conflict. Ibn Tabataba as a spiritual leader and Abu Suraya as the army leader made a joint uprising in Kufa, the center of the Shias. They were able to quickly gather many supporters for their uprising, including the Zaydi Shias. They seized Kufa and brought it under their control. Shortly after this victory, Ibn Tabataba died suspiciously. Some believe that he was eliminated by Abu Suraya, who then became the sole powerful leader of this uprising. After seizing Kufa, Abu Suraya sent delegates to other cities to encourage them to join his uprising. Soon, his uprising expanded to other cities including Mecca, Medina, Yemen, Basra, Madain, and Ahvaz, and became a serious threat for the newly established government of Ma'mun. The governors of the seized cities were selected from among the Prophet's descendants. Imam Reza's brothers, Ibrahim, Zayd, and Ismail, became the governors of Yemen, Ahvaz, and Fars, respectively. After around 10 months, Ma'mun defeated these widespread uprisings. Imam Reza did not approve nor commented on these uprisings, though his close family members, including his own brothers, participated in them. Obviously, the Imam could not support these uprisings led by someone like Abu Suraya, who was looking for his own power. The nominated governor for Medina in the Alavid uprising was Muhammad ibn Sulayman, one of the descendants of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. The majority of the Prophet's descendants and other members of Banu Hashim accepted him as the governor and paid allegiance to him. They then sent the head of the army as a messenger to Imam Reza and asked for his allegiance to Muhammad ibn Sulayman. The Imam requested for some time and postponed his decision for 20 days. After exactly 18 days, the Abbasid troops defeated the Alavid uprising in Medina and took control of the city. On that day, the Imam saw the messenger who had asked for his allegiance in the street while he was fleeing. The Imam called him by his name and asked him if his requested time period of 20 days was over. Although Ma'mun was finally able to defeat the widespread Alavid uprisings, he could not put an end to the long years of conflict between the Alavids and the Abbasids. This conflict had been ongoing since the establishment of the Abbasid government for more than 60 years. During this time of conflict, the Alavids rose up against the Abbasids' oppression in various uprisings, including the uprisings of Muhammad al-Nafs al-Zakiyah and his brother Ibrahim, the uprising of Husayn ibn Ali, the martyr of Fakh, the establishment of the Idrisid government in northwestern Africa, and the most recent uprising by Ibn Tabataba that quickly expanded to various cities in Iraq and Hejaz. The potential for future uprisings by the Alavids was a serious threat to Ma'mun's government and the future of the Abbasids. The Shia Imams were also Alavids. They were against the Abbasids and never endorsed their government. Ma'mun had witnessed that his father's harsh and severe policies against Imam Qasim could not stop the Imam from opposing the Abbasid government. Instead, the Shia followers of the Imam grew to such an extent that they even reached sensitive governmental positions. Ma'mun realized that years of restrictions, suppression, and enforcement against the Alawites could not eliminate their threats. Thus, Ma'mun, who was known as the most strategic caliph among other Abbasid caliphs, decided to find an innovative solution for dealing with the potential threat of the Alawites. Ma'mun decided to place one of the Alawites within his government. This person could not be anyone but Imam Reza, who was the most well-known character among the Alawites for all of the Muslims. Imam Reza was famous for his divine knowledge among Muslims due to his scientific work in Medina. Imam Reza was also the spiritual leader and the Imam for the Shia Muslims. This plot could have had various benefits for Ma'mun and his government. Firstly, the threat of the Alawite uprisings against Ma'mun would have been removed as someone from them was associated with the government. The Alawites would no longer be able to introduce the Abbasids as an illegitimate government to the people and thus could not recruit an army for any future uprisings. Secondly, Ma'mun's government would be legitimized for Muslims as it would be regarded as a union between the Abbasids and the Alawites. Thirdly, Imam Reza's affiliation with the government would put his spiritual and infallible character in question among Muslims by showing him as a worldly and materialistic individual. The Imam would also be regarded as responsible for the injustice and oppression of the government. Lastly, Ma'mun would be able to separate Imam Reza from the people and reduce his influence on their hearts. He could fully supervise the Imam's activities and would prohibit his potential to initiate any independent uprisings against the Abbasids. Ma'mun kept his plot to himself and did not inform anyone of his true intention. The only main opposition to this plot was from the Abbasid royal family, who did not want to lose their influence in the government. However, they had opposed and betrayed Ma'mun in the past. They supported Amin's decision to remove Ma'mun as his successor, though they had pledged upon it at the time of Harun. They had also supported Amin in his wars against Ma'mun. Thus, Ma'mun was not intimidated by their opposition to his decision. He instead wanted to instill fear in their hearts that he had enough power to stand without them. To implement his plot, Ma'mun sent a letter to Imam Reza in Medina and invited him to his capital, the city of Merv. Imam Reza, who was fully aware of Ma'mun's conspiracy and plot, rejected his invitation. However, Ma'mun sent other invitations and frequently insisted the Imam to travel to meet him at Merv. The Imam rejected Ma'mun's invitations every time but could not change his decision. Finally, Ma'mun sent military delegates to Medina to bring the Imam to Merv. Imam Reza, who realized that Ma'mun would not give up on his decision, was forced to travel to Merv with Ma'mun's delegation. Before leaving Medina, Imam Reza made a series of unprecedented actions to make it clear to everyone that his invitation to Merv was nothing but a conspiracy against him, and his travel was unwanted. When the Imam bid farewell to his family, he asked them to cry loudly for him and informed them that this would be their last meeting. The Imam then held the hand of his 5-year-old son, Imam Javad, and visited the tomb of the Prophet and sought protection for him from the Prophet. Imam Reza then asked his companions and representatives to obey Imam Javad and introduced him as his successor in the Imamat. Also, when the Imam visited the Prophet's tomb for farewell, he cried loudly. He repeatedly returned back to the tomb crying loudly. At this time, someone approached the Imam and congratulated him on his invitation by the Caliph. The Imam did not accept his greeting and told him that I will be taken far away from the vicinity of my grandfather, the Prophet, and will pass away in a distant place and will be buried by Harun's tomb. Ma'mun had recommended his military delegates to avoid passing by the Shia-dominated cities of that time, which were Kufa and Qom. The people of Kufa had multiple uprisings against the Umayyads and the Abbasids in the past. The Alawid uprising in Kufa had been suppressed in recent months just prior to the Imam's travel. Qom was also the main center for the Shias in Iran. Also, traveling with the Imam through Baghdad, the center of the Abbasid royal family, was not a wise decision either, as they were hostile to both Ma'mun and the Imam. Therefore, the delegates avoided traveling on the common route of that time from Medina to Merv, which passed by the cities of Kufa, Baghdad, and Qom. They instead traveled on a more difficult route which passed through the hostile deserts of central Iran. The travel route of the Imam from Medina to Merv was about 3,450 kilometers, and this journey took around 6 months. Today, this route is divided amongst five countries: 850 kilometers in Saudi Arabia, 200 kilometers bordering Kuwait and Iraq, 150 kilometers in Iraq, 2,100 kilometers in Iran, and 150 kilometers in Turkmenistan. The travel route of the Imam in Iran is currently known as Wilayat Road. After more than 1,200 years, many historical monuments are still affiliated with the Imam along this route. These monuments are regarded respectfully by local citizens to commemorate the Imam's presence in these locations. After Basra, the Imam's caravan entered the border of what is now Iran from Shalamcheh. Shortly after, they arrived in Ahvaz. The Imam became sick in Ahvaz due to high temperature and excessive humidity of the city. The Imam stayed in this city for a while to recover. The Imam's divine character influenced many who interacted with him during this long journey. The Imam's caravan obeyed Ma'mun's order to follow a route that limited the Imam's possible interactions with the locals. They had also restricted the Imam's interactions with the people during their short stops. However, the Imam's piety and long prayers were witnessed by the members of the caravan during this long journey. One member of the caravan who was greatly influenced by the Imam was Abbas al-Hiravi. He then went on to become one of the Imam's closest companions. Later, when Raja ibn Abi Zahak, the delegation's leader, told Ma'mun about his observations of the Imam's prayers and divine character, Ma'mun asked him to keep his observations secret and not reveal them to the public. Naishabur was the biggest city in the region with a Sunni-dominated population and had a well-established school of hadith. The news of the Imam's arrival in Naishabur had spread in the city, but the people could not openly contact the Imam due to the protection enforced by the military. However, when the caravan was leaving the city, the people got an ideal opportunity to meet the Imam. The people came in large numbers at the city's gate and surrounded the Imam's caravan. A few of the Islamic scholars approached the caravan. They called the Imam and asked him to show his face for the sake of his forefathers. They also asked the Imam to benefit them with the narration of the Prophet as had been passed to him by his forefathers. They said that they wanted to save the Imam's narration as a memory from the Imam's visit to their city. The Imam asked to stop the caravan, opened up the curtain, and showed his face to the people while they looked at the Imam with tears of joy. The people advised each other to remain silent to allow the Imam to start his speech. The Imam then recited a narration from his father, who heard it from his father. The Imam then named all of his forefathers up to the Prophet as the chain for his narration. The Imam then said the Prophet had heard this narration from Angel Jibreel, and Angel Jibreel from God. The Imam then said that God says the monotheistic expression of La ilaha illallah, no God but Allah, is his fortress, and anyone who enters his fortress will be protected from his punishment. The caravan was ordered to continue on its way as they did not want to allow the Imam to have any interaction with the people. While moving, the Imam addressed the crowd and said this narration was true under some conditions, and I am one of those conditions. The Imam with this concise narration introduced his imamah as a requirement to enter God's fortress. After decades of continuous oppression of the Shias, the Imam used this opportunity to speak directly to the crowd of Muslims about the Shias' key concept of imamah. The narration is known as Hadith al-Silsilat al-Zahab, which means the narration of the golden chain, where the chain refers to the Imam's divine forefathers who connect him to the Prophet. The number of people who heard and recorded the Imam's narration was estimated to be more than 20,000. When the Imam's caravan reached the Hisor, the Imam asked for water to make ablution for the noon prayer. However, water was not found in the caravan. The Imam then dug the soil with his own hands and miraculously a spring erupted. The Imam and the others then prayed there. Shortly after the Hisor, the caravan stopped at a location known as Kuh Sangi. The Imam leaned on the cliffs of the mountain that was used by locals to make stone pots. The Imam prayed for this mountain to be blessed as well as whatever is cooked in these stone pots. Shortly after, the Imam's caravan stopped by Harun's tomb. At this location, the Imam marked a line on the ground next to the tomb of Harun and introduced it as his own grave. He said that God will make this location a place for gathering of my Shia followers and friends. He then swore by God that any one of them who visits my grave or salutes me will be blessed by God's mercy and forgiveness. The Imam prayed here and ended his prayers with a long prostration. Finally, after around 6 months, the Imam's caravan entered Merv and the Imam was welcomed by Ma'mun. After taking a short rest from the long journey, Ma'mun finally revealed his real intention of bringing the Imam to Merv. In a meeting, he told the people that I found no one better than Ali ibn Musa for the caliphate among the entire Abbasid and Alavid family. Thus, I want to pass the caliphate to him. However, the Imam, who was aware of Ma'mun's real intention, refused to accept his offer. The Imam responded to Ma'mun that if the caliphate belongs to you, you should not pass it to someone else. And if it does not belong to you, you do not have the right to pass it to someone else. No one would believe that Ma'mun, who had fought for more than 2 years with his own brother and had killed him to gain power, would let his power go to someone else. Ma'mun wanted to make the Imam the spiritual leader for the caliphate and keep the real power for himself. He wanted to make any decision using the Imam's name and influence on the hearts of the people. Over a course of about 2 months, there were multiple discussions between Ma'mun and the Imam about his offer to the Imam for the caliphate. Ma'mun, who was faced with the Imam's solid rejection for his offer, instead proposed to appoint the Imam as his successor or crown prince in the caliphate. Ma'mun had not chosen any of his sons as a successor since defeating Amin. Thus, people were expecting him to choose someone for this position. However, the Imam's nomination as the crown prince was a very unusual proposal by Ma'mun for the public, as the Imam was about 22 years older than Ma'mun. Everyone was expecting a younger person than the caliph for the crown prince, as he is supposed to inherit the caliphate after the caliph. The Imam rejected the crown prince proposal. However, Ma'mun, who had lost his patience, threatened to kill the Imam. He told the Imam that the second caliph made a council from six of the Prophet's companions to choose the third caliph, where one of them was your forefather Ali ibn Abi Talib. Ma'mun continued saying that the second caliph ordered to behead any one of the six who disagreed with the outcome of the council. He threatened to have similar treatment to the Imam if he refused to accept his proposal for the crown prince. Ma'mun left the Imam with only two choices, either accepting his offer or be killed. The Imam had no choice but to accept Ma'mun's offer for crown prince. However, the Imam accepted with a few conditions as follows. He said that he would not appoint or oust any governmental agents. He would not change any governmental legislations. The Imam emphasized that his role would only be to observe the governmental affairs from a distance and serve only as a consultant. Ma'mun immediately accepted the Imam's conditions with the hope that he could later involve him more in the government. Ma'mun wrote the official document to appoint Imam Reza as his crown prince. In this document, he emphasized the elevated status of the Imam. Imam Reza then annotated the back of the official document. He explicitly wrote that Ma'mun has appointed me as his crown prince to get his power after him if I was alive. It appears that the Imam wanted to imply to others that he would not be alive after Ma'mun. Ma'mun set up a big ceremony where all of the high-ranking political and military officials attended. He asked them to change the color of their outfits from black, which represented the Abbasid government, to green. Although green was not known as the Alavid flag at the time, later in history it became known as the Alavid flag. Ma'mun then called the Imam with the title of Reza, which referred to the famous slogan of Al-Ridha min Ali Muhammad, used by the Alavids during their uprisings against the Abbasids. Ma'mun wanted to emphasize that the chosen character from the Prophet's family, who had consensus for the caliphate, was indeed Imam Reza. Ma'mun asked everyone to pay allegiance to the Imam as his crown prince. The first one who paid allegiance to the Imam was Abbas, one of Ma'mun's own sons, who was a candidate of becoming the crown prince. Then, all of the other governmental representatives and the people followed. Everyone who was present paid allegiance except three of the officials. Ma'mun then ordered their imprisonment. Ma'mun distributed gifts amongst the audience and paid a one-year salary of his troops in advance. The poets and preachers performed in celebration. Ma'mun then asked the Imam to deliver a speech to benefit the people. The Imam delivered a very short speech that showed his dissatisfaction. He praised God and then said, "O people, we have rights over you due to our close relation with the Prophet, and in turn you have rights over us too. If you fulfill our right, it is obligatory for us to fulfill your rights." After the ceremony, Ma'mun sent letters around the Islamic territory and informed the people about appointing his crown prince. He ordered the Imam's name to be recited along with his name in the Friday sermons. He asked his governmental officials across the Islamic territory to wear green outfits instead of their black ones, which was representing the Abbasids. He also ordered new coins with the imprinted names of himself as caliph and the Imam as his crown prince. As a result, the Imam became a very well-known character in all around the Islamic territory. Shortly after the Imam's appointment as the crown prince, Ma'mun asked the Imam to propose someone from his loyal companions as a governor for one of the unrest regions. His intention was to use the Imam's reputation and influence on the hearts of the people to control the turmoil in parts of his government. The Imam opposed this request by reminding Ma'mun of his condition for accepting his position that included not to appoint or oust any governmental representatives. Ma'mun, who realized the Imam's determination, gave up on his request. Although the Imam was forced to accept his governmental position, he never allowed Ma'mun to misuse him for his political gains. Ma'mun instead tried to portray that his government was a joint government between the Abbasids and the Alevids. He arranged for some marriages between the two families and appointed some of the Alevids to governmental positions. For instance, he appointed the Imam's brother, Ibrahim, as the governor of Yemen and chose him as the head organizer of Hajj that year. Zayd was one of Imam Reza's brother who joined the Alevid uprisings without the Imam's consent. He led one of the Alevid uprisings and took control of the city of Basra. He killed the Abbasids and whoever was affiliated to them and set their houses on fire. Due to the atrocities he inflicted, he was named Zayd al-Nar, or Zayd the Fire. His uprising in Basra was eventually defeated by the Abbasid army, and he was arrested and sent to Ma'mun in Merv. Ma'mun, who had just elected his brother, Imam Reza, as crown prince, freed Zayd. However, Ma'mun brought to the Imam's attention that Zayd's freedom was just because of him. He also told the Imam that your brother followed the tradition of Zayd ibn Ali, who had risen up in the past. The Imam rejected Ma'mun's comparison between his brother and Zayd ibn Ali, the son of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. The Imam said that Zayd ibn Ali was a scholar from the Prophet's family, and his intention for uprising was for the sake of God. The Imam then addressed his brother and condemned his actions. The Imam told him that his affiliation to the Prophet will not help him in the hereafter, and he will be responsible for his wrongdoings. When the Imam had no choice but to forcefully accept Ma'mun's appointment as a crown prince, he was criticized by some of the people, including his own Shia followers. The Imam's situation was very similar to the one of Imam Hassan's, where he was criticized by his own Shia followers upon accepting the peace treaty with Muawiyah. Both Imam Hassan and Imam Reza had put conditions on accepting the situations forced on them as a sign of their resistance. Imam Reza responded in various ways to these criticisms. Once, he responded that my action is similar to my forefather Imam Ali when he participated in the Council of Six of the Prophet's companions to select the third caliph. The Imam implied that both of them had accepted their political role due to life-threatening situations. On another occasion, the Imam reminded them about the decision of Prophet Yusuf to voluntarily accept the position of a treasurer of land due to the critical circumstances of his time. The Imam then recited the following related verse of the Quran.
قال جعلني على خزائن الأرض إني حفيظ عليم.
Yusuf said, appoint me over the storehouses of the land. Indeed, I will be a knowing guardian. The Imam told them that Prophet Yusuf accepted his position voluntarily, while I accepted it forcefully. Also, on another occasion, the Imam responded that he did not have any choice but to accept the appointment. The Imam then continued saying that if you stay patient, you will witness that I will never reach the caliphate in the future. After 3 weeks from the Imam's appointment as the crown prince, Eid al-Fitr was observed. Ma'mun asked the Imam to perform the Eid prayer for the people of Merv. The Imam refused by reminding Ma'mun of his condition not to be involved in any governmental role. Ma'mun insisted by saying that his intention was for the people to see the Imam's greatness and confess to his merit. The Imam then accepted Ma'mun's offer with the condition of performing the Eid prayer according to the tradition of his forefathers, the Prophet and Imam Ali, which was accepted by Ma'mun. The news of the Imam leading the Eid prayer spread quickly in the city. On the day of Eid, the Imam exited his house by sunrise in a simple outfit while he was barefoot. The Imam's simple clothing and his loud takbirs of the Eid prayer influenced the people, who were expecting to see someone with luxurious clothing surrounded by bodyguards similar to other high-ranking officials. Tears began to roll down from the people's eyes, and they followed the Imam by taking their shoes off. The army leaders and soldiers who were waiting for the Imam got off their horses, took off their shoes, and followed the Imam barefoot. The Imam would stop every 10 steps and would loudly recite takbirs of the Eid prayer. The people would then stop and recite takbirs right after the Imam's recitation. Loud sounds of takbirs by the huge crowd that was following the Imam spread all around the city. Fazl ibn Sahil warned Ma'mun that if the Imam continued the Eid prayer, the people would become his devotees and it is better to stop him. Ma'mun then sent someone to return the Imam. The Imam wore his shoes, went on his ride, and returned before even starting the Eid prayer. The Eid prayer was performed as usual by someone who led the prayers in the previous years. The Eid prayer, which was going to be performed in its magnificence as a sign of Muslim unity, was instead performed without its glory. During the Imam's stay in Merv, a severe drought hit the region. Many who had hatred for the Imam attributed the drought to the Imam's presence and his appointment as the crown prince. Thus, Ma'mun asked the Imam to pray for rain. The Imam accepted Ma'mun's request and said that he would perform the prayer for rain after 3 days. On the promised day, the Imam exited the city and went to the desert with a crowd of Muslims following him. The Imam delivered a speech and addressed God. Among his words, he said, "O God, you are the one who has rewarded us, the Ahlul Bayt, with a great position. As you have ordered, these people have referred to us to fulfill their requests. They request your mercy and are seeking your blessing and beneficence. O God, quench their thirst with the beneficial rain that does not harm them and send it after the people have returned from the desert to their homes." After the Imam's speech, strong winds blew and dark clouds covered the sky. The sounds of thunder spread in the air. As per the Imam's prayer, the rain did not begin until the people returned to their homes. Then, heavy rain covered the area. By witnessing this miracle, the people publicly admitted to the Imam's dignity in the eyes of God. After the rain, the Imam again delivered a speech in the city for the people. In his speech, the Imam advised them to piety, urged them to admit to the elevated right of the Prophet's family, and advised them to practically appreciate and have gratitude for God's blessing by helping the other Muslims. While the Imam was in Merv, some well-known individuals traveled to meet him. Poetry was the greatest source of media at the time and had a deep influence on the hearts of the people. The poets would travel to Merv to recite their poetry in praise of Ma'mun and his crown prince, the Imam, in hopes of receiving a reward from Ma'mun. Also, the Shia poets could now publicly recite their poetry without having any fear of persecution from the government. Di'b al-Khazai was a famous Shia poet who traveled to Merv to visit the Imam without any monetary expectation. He told the Imam that he had written poetry for him and had not recited it for anyone before. He wanted the Imam to be the first person to hear it. He recited his poetry in the eulogy of the Ahlul Bayt, describing the oppression against them. He ended his poetry by addressing Lady Fatima to resurrect from her tomb and mourn for the tombs of her children, who were martyred in various locations. The last tomb that was mentioned in the poetry belonged to Imam Qasim in Baghdad. At this time, Imam Riza asked permission from Di'b to add and complete his poetry, and he happily accepted. The Imam then recited the following line of poetry: "O Lady Fatima, a tomb of one of your children will also be in Tus, whose tragedy would be horrible and irritating until God rises the Promised One, Mahdi, who will remove our sadness and sorrow." Di'b then asked the Imam about the tomb in Tus and to whom it belonged. The Imam responded that it would be my tomb and soon Tus would become a place for my followers and pilgrims. When the Imam gave a reward to Di'b, he said that I didn't recite my poetry for monetary purposes. He instead asked for one item of the Imam's clothing, which was granted by the Imam. Ma'mun had transferred the Imam alone from Medina to Merv and never wanted his family to join him. This could be attributed to the fact that he had bad intentions for the Imam from the beginning. Ma'mun had thought that it would be harder for him to eliminate the Imam in the presence of his family. While the Imam's own family needed Ma'mun's permission to travel to Merv, the other members of his extended family could travel to Merv freely. One of the Imam's family members who decided to travel from Medina to Merv to visit him was his sister, Lady Ma'sume. She was worried about her beloved brother. Thus, shortly after Imam's travel to Merv, Lady Ma'sume left Medina with the Hajj caravan that was returning to what is today Iran. Unlike the Imam's caravan, which followed Ma'mun's order to travel through a route from the deserts of central Iran, Lady Ma'sume's caravan instead followed the usual route of the time, which passed by Kufa and Qom. Although she was eagerly waiting to meet her brother in Merv, she became sick at Saveh. She asked for help to move her to Qom, which was not far, as she had heard from her father, Imam Qasim, that the city of Qom was a center for the Shias. After 17 days of staying in Qom, she passed away and was buried in this city. She had such an elevated status in piety that Imam Reza recommended to visit and pay respect to her tomb. He promised a heavenly reward for anyone who would visit her tomb in Qom. The Imam's presence in Khorasan was a great opportunity for the locals to directly ask him questions. Ma'mun himself also asked many questions from the Imam in both public and private meetings. Ma'mun, who himself was knowledgeable in the Islamic faith, had asked the Imam many questions regarding the interpretation of the Quran, the traditions of the Prophet, and the fundamentals of the Shia belief. The Imam provided him with convincing answers. Ma'mun arranged a series of debates between the Imam and the well-known Islamic and non-Islamic scholars in his palace. His intention was to defeat and disgrace the Imam in scientific debates. If Ma'mun was able to fulfill his intention, he would ruin the Imam's reputation in the eyes of the Muslims who respected him for his endless knowledge. In the most famous debate, Ma'mun gathered the leaders of the Christians, Jews, Zoroastrians, and Sabians in his palace. He held a big official event for their debate with the Imam, where crowds of people and governmental officials attended. The Imam knew that they would not have a common ground with the leaders of other religions for the debates, as they would deny the Imam's reasoning using Quranic evidence and the traditions of the Holy Prophet. To the surprise of everyone, the Imam debated each of those leaders according to their respective holy book. The Imam demonstrated that his knowledge was not limited to only Islamic resources, but in fact he was more knowledgeable than those leaders in their own teachings. The Imam first debated with the Christian leader. The leader asked the Imam to bring two witnesses from those approved by Christians who had testified to the prophethood of Muhammad. The Imam recited the parts of the Gospel where Prophet Jesus and his apostle had spoken about the last prophet. During their debate, the Imam said that he believed in Prophet Jesus but had found only one flaw about him. The Imam said that Prophet Jesus did not pray or fast as much. The Christian leader surprisingly responded that you are wrong, as he was fasting every day and praying every night. The Imam then asked him, if that was the case, to whom was he praying and for whom was he fasting? The Imam, with this smart trick, challenged the Christians' belief that Prophet Jesus was God's manifestation on earth, as if he were God, he would not pray to himself. By the Imam's reasoning, the leader became silent. The Imam then asked him why he denies that Prophet Jesus was able to give life to the dead by God's power and not by his own power. The leader responded that someone who could raise the dead and heal the blind was indeed God himself and deserved being worshipped. The Imam then brought him multiple evidences from the Gospel, Torah, Psalms, and the Quran, where the other prophets such as Elisha, Ezekiel, Ibrahim, Moses, and Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, also had miracles of making the dead alive. When it came to the parts of the Torah, the Imam himself recited the related parts, while the Jewish leader was astonished by the Imam's clear recitation of the Torah. At the end of their debate, the Christian leader confessed that there was no such scholar like the Imam among the Muslims. The Imam then debated with the Jewish leader. The leader asked the Imam to prove for him from the Torah that Muhammad was a prophet. The Imam recited a few verses from the Torah that described the coming of Prophet Muhammad near Mount Faran, close to Mecca. The Imam also recited Prophet Moses' statement to the Israelites about the news of the coming prophet from the children of Prophet Ismail. The Imam then recited for him a verse from Prophet David in the Psalms and a verse from Prophet Jesus in the Gospel about Prophet Muhammad. The Imam then asked the Jewish leader why they didn't believe in the miracles of the other prophets after Prophet Moses. The leader responded that they would not accept any other miracle unless they were similar to what Prophet Moses had brought to them. The Imam then challenged him for their belief to the other prophets before Prophet Moses, who in fact brought different miracles. The leader could not respond to the Imam's reasoning and became silent. The Imam then asked Zoroastrian leader about their beliefs. The leader said that the Zoroaster brought us miracles that no one had brought us before. He legalized some things for us that were forbidden before. The Imam asked him, "Isn't it the case that you are following the Zoroaster just because you have received some news about him from your ancestors?" And the leader agreed. The Imam then said that this is not an acceptable reason for your beliefs, as the followers of other religions such as Judaism, Christianity, and Islam had also received similar news from their ancestors about the miracles of their prophet. By the Imam's response, the leader of the Zoroastrian could not bring a stronger reasoning for their belief in the Zoroaster and became silent. The Imam then asked if there was anyone amongst the audience who was against Islam and willing to ask him questions. Imran Sabai, who was one of the most famous debaters of his time, stood up and started a long philosophical debate with the Imam regarding God and his attributes. In the middle of their debate, the time of prayer set in, and the Imam stopped their debate to perform his prayer. At this time, Imran asked the Imam to continue their debate as his heart had softened towards the Imam's guidance. But the Imam did not accept his request. After a short break for the prayer, the Imam returned, and they continued their debate until Imran fell to prostration and converted to Islam. After this incident, no other scholar stepped forward to debate with the Imam, as they all knew that Imran was a strong debater. The Imam then left after a long day of debate. Later, Imran became one of the Imam's close companions. Ma'mun arranged multiple other debates between the Imam and other scholars of the time in hopes of defeating the Imam. Once Ma'mun brought Suleiman Marzi, a strong philosopher and debater, to debate with the Imam. Ma'mun had told Suleiman that if he could defeat the Imam in just one topic, he had served his purpose. The Imam had a long philosophical debate with Suleiman regarding God and his attributes. During the debate, Suleiman did not want to accept defeat and started to contradict his own words. His contradiction caused the laughter of Ma'mun and the audience. On another occasion, the Imam debated with Ali ibn Jahm, who used Quranic verses to reject the infallibility of the prophets. The Imam answered all of his doubts and provided him with the correct interpretation of the Quranic verses that he quoted. The Imam then narrated the true historical facts about the lives of the prophets that demonstrated their infallibility. Ali ibn Jahm, who was convinced with the Imam's response, realized his mistake in misinterpreting the Quran and repented while crying. On another occasion, Ma'mun gathered scholars from various sects of Islam to debate with the Imam. They debated with the Imam about various topics, including the Shia concept of imamah. The Imam responded to their questions with convincing Quranic and logical answers. During the debate, one of them asked about the signs of validation of the true Imam. The Imam responded that one can confirm that someone is a true Imam with two signs: his divine knowledge and the fulfillment of his prayers by God. The Imam's stay in Merv was the golden period of his imamate, as he had an exceptional opportunity to spread his knowledge as well as the Shia theology. The Imam's role as a crown prince had officially made him the second top person in the government. After around 160 years from the time of Imam Ali and Imam Hassan, where they could publicly speak to the people in the position of a Muslim caliph, it was only Imam Reza from the Shia Imams who was speaking from a governmental position. Many of the Imam's speeches, his responses to the questions, and his debates with the scholars had been witnessed by the people and recorded in history. These records are currently regarded as precious resources in the Islamic seminaries. Many of these records are available in the book known as Uyun Akhbar al-Ridha. There were multiple documents written by Imam Reza during his stay at Merv, which are available until today. For example, Jawami' al-Sharia was written by the Imam in response to Ma'mun, who had asked him for an abstract of pure Islam. In this document, the Imam explicitly reviewed the main principles of the Islamic faith, including the Shia belief of the Imamate with no fear of Ma'mun. The Imam's response also contained the answer to tens of questions regarding various aspects of Islamic law. The Imam also responded in a letter to questions asked by Muhammad ibn Sinan, one of his companions, about the logical reasoning behind various Islamic law, including ritual bath, ghusl, ablution, zakat, hajj, fasting, trading law, and halal meat. Another document that is attributed to the Imam is Al-Risala Al-Zahabiyya, or the Golden Treatise in Medicine. The Imam wrote this Risala in response to Ma'mun, who had asked the Imam to document his recommendations in medicine. When Ma'mun received the Imam's Risala, he became delighted and ordered it written with golden ink. Although the Imam held the highest governmental position after Ma'mun, his lifestyle was quite simple and his interaction with the people was humble as usual. The Imam with his behavior practically showed his detachment from this material world. Once the Imam donated his entire wealth in the way of God on the day of Arafah, Fazl ibn Sahl, who was shocked by the Imam's action, told the Imam that his action is a loss. The Imam responded that my donation is indeed a profit and whatever gains God's reward is not a loss. One of the goals of Ma'mun's plot in bringing the Imam to Merv was to isolate him from the people and his followers. He also wanted to prohibit the potential for any independent uprising by the Imam. However, the event of the Eid prayer showed Ma'mun that if he did not restrict the Imam's interactions with the people, they would be attracted to the Imam. Thus, Ma'mun put the Imam's life under intense surveillance. He deceived Hisham ibn Ibrahim, one of the Imam's close companions, and his representative in Medina who had traveled to Merv. Ma'mun appointed him as the doorkeeper of the Imam. Hisham would report any of the Imam's meetings and any word that the Imam had spoken inside his house to Ma'mun and Fazl ibn Sahil. He would also restrict the Imam's followers and companions from meeting him freely. After a year from the Imam's arrival in Merv, Ma'mun proposed his daughter, Habib, to the Imam and insisted that the Imam marry her. By this political marriage, Ma'mun was able to monitor all aspects of the Imam's private life. However, even this marriage could not attract the Imam to Ma'mun and his government. As time passed, Ma'mun realized that he could not defeat nor defame the Imam in any debate. Instead, the news of the Imam's victory in the debates spread across the Islamic territory and led to even more popularity and respect for the Imam. Ma'mun had to find a way to distract the Muslims from being attracted to the Imam and his divine knowledge. He had established a good relationship with the neighboring countries as a policy to overcome the internal problems in his government, such as war with Amin and the Alavid uprisings. Thus, he ordered the excessive translations of foreign literature such as Greek philosophy into Arabic. He then spread these translations among the Muslims in hope of distracting them from being attracted to the Imam's knowledge. After just a year from appointing the Imam as his crown prince, Ma'mun realized that his plots against the Imam were unsuccessful. The only benefit from his decision during this time was a temporary halt in the Alawite uprisings against his government. Ma'mun could not defame the Imam nor justify his decisions using the Imam's name, as the Imam always kept himself distant from Ma'mun and his government. Instead, the Imam with his wise actions made his position an exceptional opportunity to spread the Shia theology all around the Islamic territory. The main positive outcome for the Imam's appointment as the crown prince was that after decades of hostility against the Shia Imams, now ironically for the first time, the Islamic Caliph and government had to confess to the elevated status of the Shia Imams. This outcome proved the correctness of the Shia theology for the Muslims in all around the Islamic territory and accelerated their familiarity with the Shia theology. The Imam was named with respect as the crown prince all over the Islamic territory. The Shias, who had always hid their belief because of fear for their lives, were now proudly declaring and spreading their belief. Ma'mun, who had hoped to disgrace the Imam's divine character by affiliating him to his government, was now witnessing the opposite outcome from what he had intended. The Imam's interactions with the people would fill their hearts with love and respect for him to an extent that many of the people believed that the Imam had much more merit for the caliphate than Ma'mun. Also, the Imam's debates with the greatest Muslim and non-Muslim scholars of the time proved his divine knowledge for the people. Therefore, Ma'mun could not find any other ways to stop the Imam other than killing him. One reason that Ma'mun rushed to kill the Imam was the instability in Baghdad, the former capital of the Abbasids. The Abbasid royal family was outraged by Ma'mun's decision to appoint Imam Riza as his crown prince. They could not tolerate seeing the Abbasid government fall in the Alawite lineage in the future. They selected Ibrahim ibn Mahdi, one of their family members, as their chosen caliph and paid allegiance to him. Ibrahim ibn Mahdi was a corrupt character who was famous in the public for his singing and intoxication. Thus, Ma'mun decided to personally move to Baghdad to manage the instability in the city. He knew that the Abbasid would never approve the Imam as his crown prince. Also, the Abbasids considered Ma'mun's minister, Fazl ibn Sahil, as their enemy, as they held him responsible for Ma'mun's wars with Emin, who had their support. Ma'mun believed that the Abbasids would still accept him as their caliph if he could eliminate their excuse by killing both the Imam and Fazl ibn Sahil. Ma'mun wanted to prepare a favorable environment in Baghdad ahead of his arrival, and thus decided to eliminate both Imam Riza and Fazl ibn Sahil as soon as possible. Shortly after leaving Merv towards Baghdad, they arrived at Sarax, which is the current day border between Iran and Turkmenistan. Ma'mun decided to implement his plot at this location. Fazl ibn Sahil decided to go to the bathhouse, and Ma'mun asked the Imam to accompany Fazl. However, the Imam refused his request. When Ma'mun insisted, the Imam responded that he had seen the Prophet in his dream, who had asked him not to go to the bathhouse, and Ma'mun finally accepted. In the bathhouse, Fazl ibn Sahil was surrounded and murdered by Ma'mun's hidden agents. Shortly after this incident, Ma'mun's agents were arrested and brought to him. To prove his innocence in Fazl's murder, Ma'mun ordered the execution of his agents. When these agents were being taken for execution, they were crying out loud and saying that it was Ma'mun himself who had ordered the murder of Fazl. Ma'mun and his army continued their way towards Baghdad until they stopped by his father Harun's tomb, which was in a garden in the village of Sanabad near the city of Tus in Khorasan. At this place, Ma'mun decided to poison the Imam. He called the Imam in his presence and poisoned him with pomegranate juice or grapes. Imam Riza became the only Shia Imam who was directly poisoned by the hand of a Muslim caliph. It can be inferred that the Imam was poisoned with a very detrimental and strong poison, as his poisoning was a political assassination and should not have been left incomplete. Furthermore, Ma'mun wanted to remove the Imam as soon as possible, since he wanted to continue his journey to Baghdad. It is highly possible that he had gotten the poison from the Romans, as he had a good relationship with them at the time. The effect of the poison on the Imam's body was almost immediate. When the Imam left Ma'mun, he came directly back to his residence. He asked his companion Abbas al-Haravi to close all of the entrance doors as he was sick and could not meet anyone. The Imam then lay down on the bed. When the Imam was in his deathbed, Ma'mun came to visit him. He told the Imam that I don't know which tragedy is harder for me, losing you or the people's accusations that blame me for your condition. The Imam ignored Ma'mun's words. He just opened his eyes and warned Ma'mun to treat his only child, Muhammad, well, as both of them would die close to each other time-wise. During the last hours of the Imam's life, his companion Abbas al-Haravi saw a young boy inside the Imam's residence. He came to the boy and asked him how he had entered the house, as he had closed all of the entrance doors. The boy responded that the Almighty, who had brought me from Medina to Tus, in just a moment entered me into the house through a closed door. Abbas al-Haravi asked him who he was, and the boy responded that I am your Imam, Muhammad ibn Ali. He said that I am here to meet and bid farewell to my lonely and poisoned father. When Imam Riza saw his 7-year-old son, he got up and hugged him. They talked in private for a while until the Imam's soul ascended. Imam Riza was martyred on the last day of Safar in the year 203 of Hijri at the age of 54. He was martyred after being in the position of crown prince for just about 1.5 years. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali alayhi salam, known as Jawad, performed his father's rituals individually even without taking help from Abbas al-Haravi. He washed and prayed on the Imam's body. He then disappeared without anyone else noticing his presence. When Ma'mun was informed about the martyrdom of the Imam, he came to his residence. Ma'mun showed grief and sorrow to portray to the people that he was innocent in the Imam's martyrdom. He came barefoot to the Imam's burial while grieving. The Imam's burial was performed under the intense control of Ma'mun's army, and it can be inferred that most of the attendees were from his army. Ma'mun had decided to bury the Imam by his father Harun. He ordered a grave dug for the Imam behind Harun's tomb. However, the earth did not open for them even after frequent attempts. They then tried to dig a hole in the surrounding locations. When they tried digging in front of Harun's tomb, the earth opened and a fully prepared grave was discovered. They did not hesitate and buried the Imam in that grave, though the outcome was not in the favor of Ma'mun. After the Imam's martyrdom, Ma'mun sent a letter to the Abbasid royal family to inform them about the Imam's death. He asked them to obey him, as their animosity was only due to the Imam's appointment for the crown prince. He then continued his journey to Baghdad. The Imamate of Imam Reza began with the martyrdom of his father, Imam Qasim, and continued for almost 20 years until his own martyrdom. His Imamate was during the government of 3 Abbasid caliphs, Harun and his sons Amin and Ma'mun. Half of his Imamate for around 10 years coincided with Harun's government, who was one of the most powerful Abbasid caliphs. The Imam initially did not declare his imamate, as it was highly possible for Harun to persecute him, similar to what he did to the Imam's father, Imam Qasim. Later, the Imam publicly declared his imamate. At this time, Harun was overwhelmed by serious challenges in his government, including eliminating the powerful Barmaki family and suppressing the riots in the eastern parts of his government. Thus, Harun did not find an opportunity to persecute the Imam. When Amin assumed power, a series of conflicts and battles occurred between him and his brother Ma'mun. Amin's government for around 5 years was an exceptional opportunity for the Imam to publicly spread his knowledge, as Amin did not find any opportunity to put pressure on the Imam's activities in Medina. The imamate of Imam Reza continued into the government of Ma'mun for around 5 years until his direct martyrdom by Ma'mun. The main incident during the imamate of Imam Reza was his appointment as the crown prince of Ma'mun. To fulfill his plot, Ma'mun brought the imam from Medina to his capital in Merv and threatened the imam to accept his proposal to be his crown prince. However, the imam's nomination as the crown prince was a very unusual proposal by Ma'mun, as the imam was about 22 years older than Ma'mun. Everyone was expecting a younger person than the caliph for the crown prince, as he is supposed to inherit the caliphate after the caliph. Ma'mun, with his well-planned and secret conspiracy, intended to eliminate Shiaism entirely by showing the Imam as a worldly and materialistic individual, thus disgracing him in the eyes of Muslims. However, the Imam, with his wise actions and behaviors, made Ma'mun's conspiracy ineffective. The Imam, with his actions in Medina, made it clear for everyone that Ma'mun's invitation to Merv was nothing but a plot against him, and he would not return back to Medina. The Imam resisted to accept Ma'mun's offer to be his crown prince for around 2 months after his arrival in Merv. He was forced to accept the offer upon receiving life threats by Ma'mun. The Imam's condition on accepting this position prevented Ma'mun from using the Imam's name and influence on the hearts of the people to justify his actions and decisions. The Imam instead used his position to further expand the Shia theology. He used every opportunity to familiarize Muslims with his divine character and the Shia concept of the imamate. He narrated Hadith al-Silsilat al-Dhahab for the crowds of Muslims in Neishabur, where he emphasized on the Shia's key concept of imamate. He also led Eid prayer and the rain prayer at Merv and demonstrated his divine character for the people. The Imam, with his multiple debates, proved for everyone that he held divine knowledge and consolidated the Shia school of thought as a prominent sect in Islam with a strong scientific backbone. The main positive outcome from the Imam's appointment as the crown prince was, after decades of hostility against the Shia Imams, now ironically for the first time the Islamic Caliph and government had to confess to the elevated status of the Shia Imams. This outcome proved the correctness of the Shia theology for the Muslims in all around the Islamic territory and accelerated their familiarity with the Shia theology. As a result, the Imam became a very well-known character for all of the Muslims, to an extent that in the decades that followed, the next Shia Imams from Imam Reza's lineage were commonly called Ibn Reza, or the son of Reza. Ma'mun, who realized that his plots against the Imam had failed, poisoned the Imam with his own hands and martyred him after being in the position of the crown prince for just about 1.5 years. By Imam Reza's martyrdom, the second Islamic century had passed. The true Islam taught by the Prophet was gradually misinterpreted by Muslims after his demise. Muslims had many battles and civil wars against each other due to their political benefit and support for their own tribes. They divided into many sects due to their differences in interpreting the true meaning of the Quran and the Prophet's teachings. The Shia Imams, however, were able to guide their followers continuously after the Prophet's demise. They provided their followers with the correct interpretations for the Quran and the Prophet's teachings and guided them on political views. As a result, by the beginning of the third Islamic century, Shiaism was a strong and growing theology among the other sects of Muslims with a strong scientific and cultural backbone. Their undeniable influence led Ma'mun to appoint Imam Reza as his crown prince. The Imam's travel to Khorasan brought many blessings to the people of this land. With the Imam's guidance, many of the people in Khorasan became familiar with the Shia school of thought. Also, many of the Prophet's descendants, including the Imam's siblings and relatives, traveled to present-day Iran, and the Iranians became more familiar with the Shia theology as compared to the past. After the Imam's martyrdom, the village of Sanabad gradually expanded over time and turned into a city named Mashhad, which means the place of martyrdom. Currently, Mashhad is the second largest city in Iran after the capital city of Tehran. Also, Imam Reza's holy shrine is the largest shrine complex in the Islamic world. Millions of Muslims travel to Mashhad annually to visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza. For those Shias who visit his shrine, Imam Reza holds a special place in their hearts. Today, any Shia who believes in the imamate of Imam Reza is a follower of the 12 Shia imams.